You're listening to Vatican Radio.
Pope Francis's just-ended apostolic journey to Myanmar is being acclaimed as a wonderful moment for the Church in the nation. Jesuit Father Mark Raper, who has a long experience of service in Asia and who has just recently been reassigned to be the superior of the Jesuits in Myanmar, was amongst those welcoming the Pope in Yangon and explained that the Pope's presence was perceived as a tremendous gift to the country, a gift felt by all. Speaking to Philippa Hitchin as the first leg of Francis's apostolic journey came to an end, Father Raper said that the Pope's approach gave the Church, which is a tiny minority in Myanmar, a beautiful profile of gentleness, of compassion, of not judging, but of accompanying, listening and learning. But first, he told Philippa of that unscheduled meeting the Pope held with his Jesuit brothers the day before leaving Myanmar.
You were attending the meeting of the Pope with the Jesuit community here, weren't you? What can you tell us about the atmosphere and if you can share anything that he had to say to you?
Well, he was speaking as a Jesuit and he quotes St. Ignatius, Peter Faber, Claver, really wonderful to be with him in that sense. One very moving moment, a question was, Holy Father, there are people here who've travelled 3 days to be here. They've collected money for 6 months to be able to come down to. And how do you feel about that, you know, that they've come to see you? I have to say the questioner said, the people are so happy. They felt it was worth it. They're going back home now after an experience of a lifetime. And he said, well, look, in the spiritual exercises, we pray for the gift of feeling ashamed. And I feel ashamed that people do so much and give so much to be able to come such a distance to see Peter. And it's their faith which not only makes me feel ashamed, but also strengthens my faith.
Tell us something about the history of the Jesuits in this country. You've only been back here a couple of decades, haven't you, after all the missionaries, foreigners were expelled.
You know, Francis Xavier wrote to St. Ignatius saying you should send Jesuits to the kingdom of Pegu, which was the old kingdom, one of the kingdoms of Burma at that time. Then there were some Portuguese Jesuits came in the next century, the 17th century, and among the Portuguese settlers, the cardinal here, Cardinal Charles Bow, is a descendant of that people. So we like to feel we had an influence, but basically they were all chased out or killed or whatever with the upheavals that went on. Then I believe there were some Jesuits as chaplains to the British and Australian and Irish soldiers during the Second World War. But the next real arrival were the Maryland province, who came in the 50s, and they were in charge. They were put in charge, responsible for the major seminary. But with the coming of the military dictatorship and the rule of Ne Win, all those who had not been here before the nation was declared were asked to leave. So our Jesuits had to leave then at that time. And the remarkable thing is that among their students, there were several Jesuits who came to Rome in the 90s to ask Father General, could the Jesuits return? They were already bishops, the Bishop of Taungi, Bishop of Loikor. They came and asked and offered a welcome to us. And so we started less than 20 years ago a noviciate. I think in 1998 the noviciate started. And we now have several priests from that time who are among our Jesuits. So we've lost a lot, but now there are 50 Jesuits attached to the Myanmar mission.
And it's a fast-growing mission, isn't it?
You could say so. Most of our numbers are young men still in formation. But we have already, since the early days, we have several institutes which are developing into institutes of higher learning. And we have a community college in the slums, a very small room, not much bigger than this one, which is like a kitchen. But nonetheless, there are 20 students there, and it gives them a chance because these young people wouldn't have otherwise a chance. Some of them are Muslim, some of them don't have proper identity papers, they can't get work, they're not even granted their degrees even after 4 years of study. So they suffer greatly. But the community college and the businesses that have been supporting that college offer them employment as part of their training. And these young people learn how office skills, office management skills, and whatever. So anyhow, we have a range of these works. And recently, the Bishop of Bamore invited the Jesuits to take on a parish. So that's in Kachin State, close to the China border, Kachin and Shan people in the community. So it gives also our young people a pastoral experience as well as a way of learning another national language during their formation.
How difficult is it to work in this country today? Because we know that although religious freedom is enshrined in the Constitution, there is still a lot of control, a lot of suspicion on the part of the government as to what exactly the church's intentions and aims are.
We don't feel that suspicion. We don't feel that there's any oppression of religion as such. There is a difficulty for the various ethnic minorities, and the church is very rooted in the ethnic minorities. And the difficulty in the country is the conflict between the majority people and the ethnic minorities. And I think any suspicion is related with that rather than precisely with religion. We feel there's a great respect of religious people, and the Burmese people are the most welcoming of people, in fact.
Although there has been also a rise in Buddhism, in Buddhist extremism, hasn't there, which has caused perhaps some difficulties in this interfaith relationship?
One of the questions this evening to the Holy Father was about fundamentalism, and he said, there's fundamentalism in everywhere, in every religion. He said, even some Catholics would call me a heretic, he would say. And so that's a reality. And it's true that the purity of Buddhism is somehow being corrupted when a military dictatorship attempts to bend it to its needs. I suppose every religion has elements of corruption like that, of mixed so much with local culture and animism, whatever. But this is a particularly insidious moment because the fundamentalist nationalist approach is being used to justify very serious oppression of people.
There's been a lot of talk also, of course, about the situation in Rakhine State. We heard Aung San Suu Kyi talking about it quite openly. The secular media has been focused on whether the Pope can use this word Rohingya or not. What is your understanding of this difficult balance of the need to engage with the government and yet at the same time not ignore this terrible humanitarian crisis?
It's very curious that so many people in Myanmar have a sense that one group of people, the Rohingya in this case, don't share the same rights that they feel apply to themselves. It's not a situation that you can be too philosophical about, but if a people have lived for six decades without a sense of their own rights, it's hard for them to understand that other people should have rights too. So we're in a learning situation in Myanmar where people are learning what is a human right, what is human dignity, what is the common good, which is what is solidarity with others.
Aung San Suu Kyi, of course, has been heavily criticised from all sectors of the international community. Has this papal visit, do you think, done anything to strengthen her hand, to support her efforts to resolve the crisis?
Well, this is a crisis that's been decades in the making, through decades of misrule and neglect. And a papal visit of two or three days is you can't expect it to change everything, but I felt that comparing the two speeches, her speech and the Holy Father's speech, was very interesting. They were using the same almost abstract academic language, but it was all in code. You know, they were really saying that people do have rights, that they were saying all the things that, if they were applied, would mean that what's happening in Rakhine is a disaster, a total disaster, total human disaster. And I think I respect in some way the Holy Father. His trip is not over. He'll be much freer in Bangladesh to speak about the Rohingya people, I would think, either in words or symbolically in his meeting with people. He met with Muslim leaders, and from someone who spoke with them, I heard that they were absolutely thrilled with his approach and with the opportunity to meet with him. And it's a critical situation. Myanmar and Bangladesh started off saying this is just a bilateral difficulty, which is not at all. It's a situation which affects the whole world. So I think he's helped to internationalize. He spoke in a very oblique way about the United Nations and the role of the United Nations, and it sounded all very neutral, but you could say I'm sure that the points were heard and taken.
As you say, this is the first leg of a two-country, a two-nation journey. Is it possible at this stage to draw any conclusions about the kind of impact it may have on the church here in Myanmar?
It's a wonderful moment for the church. There was some fear, you know, that how he would speak, would it cause backlash? Or I think that the attempts, the readiness right from the very beginning, back before this particular border conflict and massive humanitarian crisis arose, the decision was taken in the middle of the year for him to come here. But the alacrity with which the Burmese government accepted the idea and invited him, I think for a person of his international standing and his moral standing to visit Myanmar, is a tremendous gift to the country, and I sense that people feel that. I think they feel, and the church, which is a tiny minority within the country, is given a profile, and it's a profile of gentleness. It's a profile of compassion, and a profile of not judging, not saying you should do this or you should do that. Why did you do this? But simply accompanying, coming to listen, coming to learn. Yeah, it makes sense. It's not the approach people have been advising him or wanting him to take, but it makes sense when you see it in practice.
That was Jesuit Father Mark Raper, Superior of the Jesuits in Myanmar.